This is Speaking of Purpose, where we talk to real people making real change. 2025 will go on record as being one of the most challenging years when it comes to America's social safety net. Changes in U.S. federal funding has eroded organizations across the nation and internationally. On a larger scale, these pullbacks pose an even greater threat, a risk to civil society itself. In this episode, we speak with Michael Thatcher, CEO of Charity Navigator, and Victoria Vrana, CEO of Global Giving, about the consequences of these policy changes.
Now is the time to step up and make your voice heard.
So many individuals in the U.S. are touched by a nonprofit every single day, and they may not even realize it.
Where opportunity might present itself, and the role corporate leadership is being called to play. So this year has seen a series of announcements of pullbacks in funding for the social sector, with billions in funds pulled by the U.S. administration slated for domestic nonprofits and international aid. We've all read the headlines, seen the news stories, but today we'd love to hear what you're seeing on the front lines of the nonprofit sector, both in America and abroad. So, Michael, let's start with you. What have been the impacts to nonprofits in the U.S.?
The bottom line is what was one of the most secure forms of funding for nonprofits has become the least secure. And, you know, if you think about it, over 30% of U.S. nonprofits receive some form of government funding, whether it's direct federal funding or indirectly through state and local government. And that can be a significant portion of their annual revenue. And so I would say the sector is reeling right now and really trying to figure out how to fill the gaps, how to keep going. There's been, you know, the original data was just updated on the number of jobs lost. It's actually 20,000 jobs now that have been lost since January of this year. So that's a lot of people that have been affected. And I think we tend to think about it in terms of the cost and the impact on the nonprofits. But go downstream. Who are those nonprofits serving? And who are the people that are no longer getting services? And this is across such a wide variety of areas. It's devastating on the international front, but on the national front, we're starting to really feel it too.
So let's go there. Victoria, tell us what you are seeing on the international front.
Absolutely. And Sona, thanks so much for having us and for creating the space for this conversation. I think as this situation evolves so quickly, you know, we all need to keep up with what the realities on the ground are. At Global Giving, we're hearing from hundreds of organizations in over 75 countries, and their funding has vanished overnight, and in many cases, the need has grown. So as Michael talked about with the 20,000 jobs lost, that doesn't take into consideration at all the jobs lost around the world. And so in these situations, too, having a job at a community-led organization can be the difference between, you know, being a beneficiary and being a stable source of support for your family. So it's both the impact on the organizations and the people. We've had partners tell us heartbreaking things, like they've had to shut down a mental health project in a stateless community right away, that they're no longer able to provide HIV treatment to thousands of patients, that they're unable to keep journalists safe in conflict zones. So programs are shutting down. Organizations are under stress, and these organizations are real lifelines. You know, they keep refugee families housed, they keep clinics open, they keep food on the table, and they feel abandoned in many ways with the abrupt changes. So that's why Global Giving launched Community Aid Fund, which is a way to deliver fast, flexible support to these frontline organizations, because almost every organization, whether it's directly impacted or not by federal funding cuts, is having to pivot and adapt and step up to extra needs. And especially small local grassroots organizations, they often don't have that capacity to make those quick shifts. So the need is just tremendous.
Yeah. And I thank you for painting the picture, because I think sometimes these can feel more like theoretical changes and you don't really understand how they have that real life impact. And so those examples are really helpful. Victoria, let's stay with you for the first part of this next question. So USAID has been formally dismantled. As the primary provider of U.S. humanitarian and development assistance worldwide, there's serious consequences abroad, like we just spoke about, but there's also impacts domestically. So what do you think people need to know about the importance of development work abroad and its effect on domestic issues? And then, Michael, we're going to come to you and ask you as well.
It's such a great question, and I think it is one of those things that people don't fully understand. And so, you know, it's not really just about aid disappearing. This is a humanitarian support system that's collapsing. And the United States, along with many other nations around the world, have helped build this system for decades. It's strategic infrastructure, really. And that strategic infrastructure does more than just serve the communities directly around the world. It reduces conflict. It supports health systems. It keeps kids in school. It provides jobs. It stabilizes communities. And when that changes, that absolutely has an impact on folks in the U.S. as well, right? We see ripple effects as the system vanishes overnight. You see instability in the supply chains. You see rising displacement that's already exacerbating an extreme challenge with refugees around the world. And health crises, right? The investment in global health helps keep Americans healthy and safe as well, again, as the people in the communities they serve.
So, Michael, is there anything you'd want to add about what's happening in the wake of these changes that may not be as obvious to the average person out there?
You know, if you think about development, we often talk about sort of the three-legged stool of national security, diplomacy, defense, and development. And eliminating development is essentially kicking out one of the legs. And so the stool's toppling over right now. And, you know, 50 plus years of really all the goodwill we have built in all these other countries, that's gone. It's gone overnight. And so I think the implications for how the rest of the world sees the United States are pretty significant. I mean, we have direct impact in country, but who we are and how we are seen internationally has been transformed, and not in a good way.
And if I can just add too, Michael, building off of what you're saying, is that organizations feel so abandoned, right, by the United States from this action, and yet there are people in the United States who care so much about these organizations and these communities, including people who built the system. We have been working with a group of former USAID workers, and the minute they lost their jobs, they were looking for ways to support the organizations that their programs had been serving. And so far, they've raised tens and thousands of dollars through global giving for HIV programs. But there's so many folks out there who do care. And so every signal we can send that that America still stands beside these communities and organizations is absolutely critical.
Yeah, and just on a personal note, it's been interesting. Even I'm located in Canada, Canadian, and even talking to some of the people I know in the U.S., they're asking how Canadians perceive them now. Like that, you know, what you're talking about, Michael, is really true. It gets right down to the individual level, to the extent that they asked me if they should even come to Canada for a vacation because they're not sure they're going to be welcome, which is really interesting. And that's, you know, based on the tariffs as well as the international aid decisions. But I think you're right. I think sometimes it's just we don't necessarily see how that might affect us personally when we're, you know, living our lives in normal ways and suddenly you bump up against it in these weird ways. But I want to zoom all the way out just for a moment. If the nonprofit sector were to crumble entirely, and I think we're using pretty strong language, but I don't think it's hyperbolic. But, you know, if it were to crumble entirely, what would be the effect on civil society? Like, what do we lose as humans when we don't have these social safety nets or where we don't have this ethos of giving?
I'm happy to jump in. I mean, I think the if you think about, you know, and I'm going to speak from a very sort of U.S. centric perspective, but the nonprofit sector in the United States is well over 100 years old. We've built a whole structure where we don't have government provided services. And when you're in need, you go to a hospital that's a nonprofit hospital. It's been paid for by government. But the whole structure is nonprofit and it is coming from civil society. So to essentially tear a hole in the safety net without an alternative plan, and I think that's the problem that I feel right now, is that the damage is being done, but there isn't necessarily an alternative being proposed. And so I do think it will devastate the sector itself. But again, I want to keep coming back to the fact that this is going to have repercussions on real people and real lives. And we're going to see that in this country in a way that we have not seen in a very long time. And I think that's the piece I'm really worried about right now. The other beautiful thing about the nonprofit sector, and it's an independent sector and it has been nonpartisan. And that's also something that is really important for people to remember, that, you know, giving is American. It is something that we all do. And also we are all impacted and served by the nonprofit sector, whether it's after school programs for our children, elder care, addiction care, hospitals, food, all of these different aid mechanisms. It's all built into our social framework. So if we're changing it, we need alternative plans. And I really don't know what those are right now.
Yeah. As Michael says, so many individuals in the U.S. are touched by a nonprofit every single day. And they may not even realize it. It can be invisible to some, but there's so many programs, from after school programs to hospitals to Meals on Wheels to programs for the elderly, like that they're run by nonprofits in this country. And so as organizations are threatened, as their funding is cut, as they shut down, that's going to impact individuals. On the civil society front, though, you know, for the last couple of decades at Global Giving, we've been watching authoritarian regimes around the world really kind of close and put pressure on civil society with all kinds of different attacks on non-governmental organizations and nonprofits around the world. And the civil society as a sector is part of a thriving democracy. It's the place where people come together. It's the place where communities are helping themselves. And it's an important balance in a democracy, along with independent and free media and a number of other kind of legs of that stool, as Michael was talking about. And so to see civil society under threat in different ways in the United States needs to raise some alarm bells. On the generosity front, right? Again, huge American tradition. We have this enormous, enormous outpouring of generosity in the United States. And that's so important to thriving, healthy societies. There's been research from the Too Good Institute that shows that engagement in civil society and giving and volunteering leads to higher turnout at the polls. These things are closely connected. And so having the ability to give and to volunteer without any kind of fear, without any kind of restrictions, again, it's really part of healthy communities in the U.S. We need more of it, not less. We need encouragement for it, not restrictions.
Yeah, I think that's so well said, and appreciate those perspectives. You know, when I think about it at the very individual level, the value of, working in the nonprofit sector or volunteering, you develop compassion and empathy for people who may have different lived experiences. I know, you know, very personally speaking, it has opened my eyes to the challenges that I maybe wasn't exposed to growing up, but gives me great, a great sense of love for humanity and realizing how much I have to give, which both feels good because it gives me a sense of efficacy, but it's even better because people will benefit from it. And so I think robbing humans of that opportunity to connect, and especially in a world where social media has polarized us so much, and we live in these echo chambers and these silos and vilify, the other sides, I really see nonprofits as being bridges between communities. So, all in with you on that. I said we were going to zoom out. I want to zoom right back in now, Michael, from your data. Is the outlook for the communities served by the nonprofit sector? You've mentioned this a few times. It's not just the nonprofit sector. It's the communities that are served by them. Who, from your perspective, looks to be at the greatest risk?
So, and again, those who are the most marginalized, it's going to be disproportionately disfavored, right? So the more a community is on the outskirts, or let's say disfavored within the current environment, they will be more disadvantaged at this point in time. And so, this is affecting rural communities. It's affecting organizations that are already on the marginal front. Different urban areas are going to be, we should be seeing an increase in homelessness, food insecurity, and other signs of poverty are all going to be growing as this persists. I think internationally, we're already seeing the effects, and I think Victoria can probably speak to this with more data, but the increase in malaria-related deaths, HIV/AIDS-related deaths, and food insecurity is all on the uprise. And some of the estimates that we've seen are, by eliminating US government malaria funding for a year, it could relate to almost 15 million additional cases, which would be over 100,000 additional deaths. That's the kind of amplitude that we're looking at with the reduction in aid at this point in time.
Victoria, why don't you jump in?
Yeah, it is it, the impact is truly devastating, both in the short term and the long term. So in the short term, again, like global health needs are acute, and folks who are undergoing treatment right now, so especially folks who had HIV medication from PEPFAR and things like that, are some of the first to be impacted, so the very most vulnerable. One of our partners, who's involved in the fundraiser by the USAID workers that I mentioned, serves kids who have HIV, right? Some of whom are orphans. And they're reporting that thriving children who were stable, just, weeks ago are now starting to go into the hospital because they don't have access to medication anymore. So there is this immediate impact. It's particularly difficult for refugees, for LGBTQ communities around the world, for stateless children, and for rural populations. So those are all impacted most quickly. Folks who are in conflict situations, and then who were impacted by natural disasters. And we've got hurricane season coming up. And those situations are going to be made so much worse by kind of the impact that's been happening all year on organizations. And then you kind of think about the longer term effects of vaccine programs not going into effect, right? And these are the ripples and the implications we're going to feel in the months to come. So I agree with Michael. It really is the most vulnerable populations, but I think when you look at the United States, there are nonprofits across the board that are being affected. It's not just kind of one area or one particular cause or one particular geography. I'm not sure any of us anticipated the impact on science, for example, or research that we've seen. And again, that's going to have long-term downstream effects both on our talent pool in the United States and also on health, as we continue to feel the impact of these cuts.
It's interesting as I'm hearing both of you enumerate the groups that will be most impacted. It occurs to me that that almost captures the entire population when you add them all up. And so at lump some level, it will be almost like, the 7 degrees of separation. It'll be like someone is impacted, if not you. And I think that's the reality. Just what you're talking about in terms of research, I had a former colleague reach out to me and just say, there was this funding for research that was pulled, and so her niece is now had got this very rare disease, and now the family is looking at, staring down a future, going, she may not get the medical breakthrough that she needs. And okay, the medical breakthrough is one thing, but the hope is a whole other level of devastation. Okay, so this is heavy, very heavy. I want to start shifting the conversation here to, okay, where is there opportunity? Where are there silver linings? Where can we go from here? What can we do? And I want to actually talk to the corporate sector because, Victoria, you pulled on a thread that was interesting when you said, supply chains are being disrupted. I want to pull that thread a little more. So, how are corporations being affected by these issues? And what role do you see, you know, CEOs or corporate leaders playing right now? So, Michael, I'd love to hear from you on this.
Talk about logistics and supply chain. Corporations know how to do that. They also know how to manage data. There's one thing we didn't talk about, but there's with the some of the work with at NOAA and the environmental data. Who's going to preserve that data? There's actually a movement within the nonprofit sector to say we've got to save the data. But is that something that the nonprofit that's already strapped should be actually approaching? Or is that a data problem that some of the big tech companies might want to take on and preserve vital scientific information that isn't necessarily being deleted, but it's no longer being maintained? So let's say maintaining some of the great information that science, government science, nonprofit science has really brought to light. You mentioned just a minute ago talking about someone who may not get a certain health care. We've got to keep going with cancer research. My partner is alive right now because she had access to a trial dealing with the form of lymphoma that she had that's kept her alive and actually re-given her a life right now. That wouldn't have happened without that. So it's very personal to me on some fronts. And I do think that corporations have an opportunity to step up. But here's the thing, and here's what I'm not seeing from corporations. They're quiet right now. They have skin in the game. They have an ability to do something. They have voice. If we don't use our voice right now, we're losing it forever. And I think that's something that people really need to wake up to really quickly. Because things are going away if you don't say something. So, I mean, now is the time to step up and make your voice heard. It's been interesting for us at Charity Navigator. We normally are not doing a lot of advocacy work. We are doing a lot of advocacy work right now because we're seeing everything that we stand for and represent being taken away from us. So I would speak to the, you know, to the corporate leaders listening to this. What is it that you can do, given who you are and what your identity is as a corporation, and how can you use that to bring benefit to the world right now at a time where those that have been really focused on it are compromised? We need your help.
I agree 100% with that, that this is the time for bold, moral, visible leadership, both for the nonprofits that corporations support, their existing partners, for the sector, but also for their employees to see them stepping up. You know, corporate philanthropy can often move much faster than foundations and institutional philanthropy, and they can move flexibly. We all learned so much during COVID about we can just release that restriction. We can give general operating support. We can double grants. We can give 2 years so people have assurance and stability. And you know what? We can do those things again. This is a similar kind of crisis. During COVID, Global Giving mobilized $14 million in urgent, flexible microgrants to thousands of organizations. And that provided such a lifeline and such a hope. And this is the moment to bring back those lessons. I think that any donor should look at their existing partners, right? Reach out. Let them know you're thinking about them. Listen. Hear what they need. See where you can double down. And organizations really need investment and capacity right now. So organizations that have lost funding, especially government funding, they're looking at how to diversify their funding streams. People are needing to shore up their data security. They're needing to invest in scenario planning. They're needing to invest in risk analysis and in all kinds of things that your average nonprofit doesn't usually have the extra money to invest in. And so I think that any partner, but particularly corporates, they can also bring expertise and connections to organizations. Business leaders should be asking themselves, you know, what side of this moment do we want to be on for now and the future? But at Global Giving, we also know that some issues are sensitive and some things are complicated. And so we have also in the past facilitated, you know, kind of anonymous contributions where companies feel their leadership may feel really strongly about something, but they want to tread carefully. And so that's something that we do for all kinds of donors as well, because we know that risk tolerance has gone, you know, way down, that tolerance for risk at this moment, and it is paralyzing folks. And so this is the moment to act. So however you can free up those resources, it's really essential.
Yeah, I think you're getting to a really important nuance, Victoria, because A, the climate has changed, the risk tolerances have changed. I think CEOs post, you know, Middle Eastern conflict have been very reticent to get involved because it poses a risk to their companies. But I think if we go back to something that was said earlier around, you know, giving is bipartisan. And, you know, 83%, I think, is the number of Americans who say that, you know, yes, generosity is really important. We need to support nonprofits. What's really interesting is we haven't seen many companies lean in and run crisis campaigns like they did in the pandemic, like you were referring to, Victoria. There was a massive outpouring. It didn't feel polarizing just to help people in a pandemic. It feels deeply polarizing now, but I would challenge that because, for example, even at our own company, we ran a 4-day matching campaign just to say, support the nonprofits you care about. We're a small company, but we raised $100,000 in 4 days. Now imagine what a global enterprise could do if they put just a simple message that said, support the nonprofit and communities you care about now. That could be pretty phenomenal. And it's an outlet because the reality is, I haven't stopped being a person of color because DEI policies have changed. All the things I care about still exist. I just don't feel like I can bring them to work, for example. That's how some people are feeling. So I think, you know, we often talk about the existential threats. I think there's an existential opportunity here. So, Michael, I'd love to hear kind of your response to this.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I'm hearing is exactly what needs to be said, in the sense that giving is a way of actually engaging. It's an outlet to channel my feelings of frustration, my feelings of caring, of rage. It's a way of actually moving things in the right direction. Just a couple of stats. You know, at Charity Navigator, since January, we've seen $11 million go through our platform to a wide variety of organizations. And what's happening is, it may not be the companies that are doing this, but it's the people working in the companies. They are stepping up and they are giving. And, you know, organizations like the ACLU and Civil Liberties are getting significantly more donations right now because people care about that. So to your point about, you know, the issue doesn't go away. I am who I am and that stays the same. We have an opportunity within the different, in the corporate world, of helping the employees, but also stay the course. I think one of the things that happens in a moment of crisis is people lose confidence in their belief systems and what they've been doing, that they actually spent time figuring out where's the right organization, what are the things we believe in as a company that we want to support. Don't walk away from that now just because there's some bumps in the road. Now is when the organizations need your help much more than they have in the past. So stay true to the ones that you love in all areas, and that includes your philanthropy. I love the idea of sort of running spot campaigns to really help employees feel empowered to go out and give. We try and make that easier through creating lists around specific areas. You know, we've been talking about, you know, the cuts to USAID. We've built a list around that to also help channel money to really focus in on the organizations that need help. There's almost $600,000 that's gone to that list since USAID was shuttered. So we're doing this. We're trying to make it easier for you. And I think the other nuance to know, platforms like Global Giving and Charity Navigator are nonpartisan. You know, we've looked at who uses us, and it's almost a 50-50 split between Republican and Democrat. And that's beautiful, right? So yes, social media has been polarizing, but actually nonprofit infrastructure, and we are infrastructure, we're playing in a nonpartisan game so that everyone can actually find organizations they care about and find the good ones and then really make a difference with our donations.
Absolutely. I want to come back to this, this conversation we've been having about what happened in the pandemic, because Victoria, you shared some interesting examples about, you know, changing the way you fund, removing restrictions, removing reporting requirements, doing unrestricted grants. I'm curious if there are some silver linings in this time. Are there opportunities to do things differently? Because let's face it, the nonprofit sector is not without its own issues. It's not perfect. So are there opportunities at this time to do things differently? Any real life examples or areas you think we could be focusing on right now that could actually strengthen the system?
Absolutely. I mean, there's the who we fund and there's the how we fund. And so some of these techniques, general operating support, multi-year support, flexible funding, reduced reporting, those are so much about the how we fund. I would also add investing in capacity building, and that's part of the listening to your partners and seeing what they really need. We're also seeing, unfortunately, a big need for mergers and acquisitions and strategic collaboration among organizations, both around the world and at home. And that's another thing that takes time and resources to properly evaluate and make happen. And the funding for that is super rare. And the expertise for that is also really rare. And so, you know, where people have partners who are kind of engaging in those explorations, specific for support for that can be such an enormous relief to organizations. I think the other silver lining, especially globally, is, you know, the sector, the development and humanitarian aid system for a long time has been moving very slowly towards this localization idea. And the idea that we at Global Giving have known for, you know, over 20 years, people in communities have the best solutions for their challenges. Right? Community-led solutions are some of the most powerful solutions. And so really funding local leaders and trusting them, whether it's outside the U.S. or inside U.S. communities, I think is a big bright silver lining for the future, is how we remove the barriers to that local funding and help those kind of grassroots community-based organizations, because that the transformation is going to come best from within those organizations. So those are the kinds of things that we're hopeful about. You know, local leaders know what they need, and especially too in times of crisis. That's the other thing that I think folks have begun to understand more and more, is that community organizations, whether they're a disaster org or not, when disaster strikes, they're the ones who are trusted by people in communities, and they're the ones who are on the ground before the cavalry comes and long after the media leaves. And so making sure they're part of the solution going forward is something we look forward to having happen more and more.
Michael, jump in.
Sure. I mean, I think COVID was a great teacher in the sense that it forced people who wanted to help via remote means. And I think that's still highly relevant today. And sort of the volunteer programs, the mentoring programs, there's organizations are in crisis right now. The corporate sector has a lot of smart people that are less directly implicated in the crisis of, let's say, the small local nonprofit. It's a wonderful opportunity for staff and employees to really sort of learn and grow through helping another entity. So I would highly suggest, you know, volunteer programs. I think the other silver lining, and I was in a meeting earlier this week where there were ideologically competitive organizations in the same room or same Zoom, let's say, trying to sort through how are we going to deal with this situation right now. So what's happening is that competitors are becoming collaborators. And so that's part of the necessity. Yes, the mergers are happening and there's the shuttering of organizations, but there are also people that are saying, wait a minute, this is going away and it matters to all of us. Even though ideologically or philosophically or religiously I disagree with you, we've got to save this. And so part of what that means is a little bit holding in check some of my ideals and looking at the bigger picture of how are we really making a difference in the world. And I think that level of bridging the divide and the polarization is one of the most uplifting things I am seeing, in the sense that we're finally getting beyond our differences, because the problems are so real that they're no longer theoretical.
Yeah, very well said. I will say it's been interesting learning for me. I haven't been in the sector as long as either of you have. But one thing I have learned over the last decade is how competitive the nonprofit sector actually is. And it's kind of eye-opening. I mean, you don't think about it until you're in it and you see. And I think what's been interesting is, with the whole sector under threat, this we over me mentality has really emerged. And I think if we operate from that we over me, me will be taken care of through that, maybe just in a different form. So yeah, I'm with both of you. I think this idea of collaboration and you know, it may feel like self-sacrifice, but it is for the whole. And at some point, you know, sometimes that's what's required. I'm going to take us up another level here. So Diane Yentl, the president and CEO of the National Council of Nonprofits, said this a few months ago, and I think it's a really powerful quote. She said, "We'll either end the year on a spectrum of harm, from somewhat harmed to potentially decimated, or we'll end it strengthened, not just in spite of, but because of the threats. If we do this right, we'll be strengthened." And so just thinking big picture now, thinking about the whole ecosystem, corporates, employees, citizens, governments, media, what needs to be done to ensure that we come out of this year stronger than we started? So it's a big question. Victoria, I'd love to start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to what we were just saying, in that, you know, if we dissolve the boundaries a little bit between organizations and around organizations, and can function even more as a sector and as a movement, because it's the people we all are trying to serve that matter. It's the issues that we care deeply about that are where the work is. It's not really about our individual organizations or institutions. And, you know, as Michael shared, it's true. I've seen so many conversations among competitors and sharing of information and dissolving of boundaries and unity, real unity, and kind of quicker agreement on the things that we share in common, because the need is so great and the urgency is so great. So in order for us to end the year stronger, it's about that cohesion and about that unity across the sector. And it's also about a deeper understanding and appreciation from people of the sector and the difference that it makes in their lives, and that visibility. And, you know, that's something I think we're all going to have to work on to get to. I don't want to see that happen because people feel the absence of services and organizations. I want to see that happen because people have that connection and visibility and love of the organizations in their community. And so that will also be the kind of thing that helps us end up much stronger in the end of the day. Michael, what do you think?
I mean, I'll just sort of keep going along the same lines, and sort of maybe it was just thinking back of one of the beautiful things that happened during COVID was the increase of what we call mutual aid, which was people helping people irrespective of a tax benefit, or was it a nonprofit, was it a for-profit. I mean, it was, you know, in my block in New York City, we were trying to keep restaurants alive that we all loved. We were making sure the laundromat didn't go under, things like that. And that's where, again, I think at the essence of what we do in the sector, it's about people helping people. And that has a tax code associated with it. But at the end of the day, if that stays the essential bit and we get beyond the boundaries of or how we're incorporated or the whys, it's more about, you know, figuring out what is the right why, what's the right purpose. I think we'll get out of our own way and we'll actually start making a real difference. So my hope is, I think with the graying of the lines between the different sectors, will we reach a place where we're really trying to help each other and bring benefit to each other so that people are really cared for and that we're not abandoning different parts of our society? That to me is the opportunity. And I do see signs that it's happening. Again, the fact that we're competitors are convening to try and work on this problem, that we have the, you mentioned the competitiveness of the nonprofit sector. I think there's also a bit of suspicion that the nonprofit sector sometimes has with corporate America. And I think that's also changing right now. And so the fact that there's a better interaction, that there's certainly opportunity here. So I hope, that's my hope, is that we get beyond our definitions and we focus on what really matters instead of, you know, how I want to be called or how I want to be seen in the world.
I think too, companies have a big role in this, back to something we've mentioned before with their employees, because as Michael says, it's about people helping people. And in times of instability and, you know, fear and distress like this, you do get really entrenched, right? You get really narrowly focused into your own family, your own community, your own kind of circle in a positive way that companies can really support. So supporting with match funding so employees can give gifts to any organization or cause they want, but also providing that volunteering space, whether it's time off or dollars for doers or all those kinds of programs, because it's healing on the donor and volunteer side for us to be able to have those connections right now. Whenever I get overwhelmed, I look at like how I can volunteer, how I can help an individual person with an informational interview, where I can get involved in my community, where I can donate to something I care about. And it always makes me feel better. And it's important for like our community and our employee base's well-being right now to allow that in any kind of area that they want to participate.
So interesting, as we're ending this conversation, the theme that's surfacing for me that I didn't actually expect is the power of proximity. And so being close to the communities, being close to each other, corporates and nonprofits coming together. So really combating the impulse to stay in our own seats, in our own worlds, but to actually get proximate. And Victoria, you talked about it earlier as well, you know, with community-led solutions. So thank you for that. I think that's a really powerful inspiration for those of us who are looking for ways to feel more efficacious, to feel less hopeless, and to find that sense of well-being that I think many of us are actually struggling with right now. So I'm going to come to the last question now. This podcast is called Speaking of Purpose. So I want to ask each of you, what about this topic needs to be said? So Michael, let's start with you.
I think the way I'll answer this is, speaking of purpose, it's what is my purpose? And I have a mantra that I live by, which is follow your heart, use your head, and make a difference. And I think the key part of that, where we're at today, it's about, you know, yes, you're emotionally triggered, you've thought about what you're going to do, but you got to get out and go do it. So it's not about thinking the right things or feeling the right things. It's about doing them, right? So if there's anything that people take away from this, is it's not someone else that's going to sort it out. It's me. I've got to get off my butt and go out and do something. So do that, right? Whatever it is for you, go do it.
Yeah, I love that, Michael, right? This is the time to take action. And whether that's small or big, whether that's behind the scenes, whether that's public, it is not the time to stay frozen. Because in some ways in our country, we've taken generosity and our social sector and our nonprofit sector and civil society for granted, right? We've had our ups and downs. We have our threats and challenges. There is an existential threat to our sector right now. And we all have a a part in making sure that the ecosystem for our communities thrives and stays strong, and that the pathways for generosity stay vibrant and true, and that people do have that chance to, as we're saying, be proximate and be engaged in their community and to connect and to create glue instead of division, because we need it now more than ever. And so lots of different ways to get involved, and just taking one step for individuals, making a small gift, right? All those things add up. We need those pathways and opportunities now more than ever.
Yeah, in some ways, if you've never done it, now is the time.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to hear more stories about real people making real change. Till next time.